Think you'd spot a narcissist on the first date? Think again. From love bombing to gaslighting, Carla Leto breaks down how egomaniacs slip through the cracks and how to stop falling for the charm before it destroys you. Greetings and welcome to Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew. We're back with another episode, and today I have a special guest. We have Carla Leto with us, and Carla is a licensed marriage family therapist, and more importantly, she has a new book out
called Outsmarting Egomaniacs, How to Respond to Narcissists and Master Manipulators. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Tell us about the book. Let's maybe start there, or your practice. How did you get into it?
Sure. I've been a therapist for over a decade now in Los Angeles and developed a specialization in narcissism and helping people with narcissistic abuse recovery. I started seeing a lot of people in toxic relationships and people dealing with manipulation, and that kind of became my jam. And then I wrote a book, which came out just a few months ago, as Andrew said, Outsmarting Egomaniacs, How to Respond to Narcissists and Master Manipulators. The idea behind that was to write a book. Listen, there are a ton of books out there about narcissism and what it is, but I wanted to write something easily digestible, easy to read, entertaining, and add the humor and the sarcasm so that I could reach as many people as possible to understand exactly what's going on, how you're getting manipulated, and how to break free. And so that's basically what the book is about.
So would you say the book is for people that are already in relationships or getting out of them, or just to how to recognize narcissism in general?
All of the above. I mean, the book really starts with what narcissism is, kind of on a spectrum. We mentioned the spectrum earlier. You know, some people just have traits and they don't have a full-blown disorder, but that doesn't really matter if you're in a relationship where you're being manipulated or emotionally abused. You're trying to figure out what's going on and what to do about it. It's, you know, understanding that and manipulation tactics, like what they're doing to you and why you're feeling stuck and, you know, what, you know, tricks they're playing on you. And then I kind of get into some archetypes about different types of manipulators, because now that we're not really saying if someone's a full-blown narcissist or not, it's like, well, what's happening to you? Are they playing the victim all the time? Or are they control, you know, do you feel controlled? Often it's all of those things. But I have chapters about different archetypes so people can identify their experience. Like, yeah, I'm with someone really controlling and they won't let me see my friends, or, you know, this and that. And kind of how you can respond to them and deal with that in kind of a brief way. And then later on in the book, I get into all the sort of like communication tips and how to really kind of communicate effectively with someone difficult. Also, you know, some self-awareness and sort of the, like, almost as if you're with a therapist, thinking about your family dynamic and how you got stuck attracting people like this in the first place, and just, you know, how to detach, how to build your confidence and get your life back. So if you are in that kind of like end phase of, I just broke up with one, it's sort of like how to get your life back, how to empower yourself and start to cultivate healthier relationships in the future. If you're feeling stuck in one, then I think, like, you know, all throughout the book, it's helping you understand what's going on and how to better deal with it.
Well, I can be one of your readers, because I was stuck in something. And again, I have to be careful and clear to the audience that the last relationship that started this podcast that everybody should know about by now, I never said she was on the, she was never diagnosed with NPD, but she was absolutely on the spectrum. And when I came out of that relationship, my self-respect was gone, my ego, my libido, everything about who I thought I was a shell of a man. There was just an emptiness. And I literally woke up one morning and said, what the fuck just happened? Like, I did not understand what just happened. And we're talking about 2 years and almost three, 2 years and maybe 8 months or something. And it was horrible. So the book does address recovering from a bad...
Yeah. I mean, you know, these relationships strip you of your sense of self.
Yeah, absolutely.
they plant self-doubt seeds, because every experience that you have is minimized, it's distorted, it's not validated. And so you don't have a voice. And then when you don't have a voice, you kind of shrink more and more. And over time, you like completely lose your sense of self and your confidence, and you're disconnected from your value as a person. You don't even recognize anymore what your value is. And that is how the manipulator gets you. You start focusing on how to please this person and upset them instead of take care of yourself, right? So you focus on, how do I please this person? How do I make this person not be mad at me? Instead of, how do I take care of myself, get my needs met, advocate for myself, set boundaries, right? Which are things that you have to do in a relationship all the time, including healthy relationships. You have to communicate your needs. Narcissists and manipulators don't allow you to do that. They're in control, and they don't let you have an experience that contradicts the experience they want to create.
One, I have a couple of questions here. One of the things that happened to me that really pulled the rug from underneath me was at the very beginning, because we met on eHarmony and there was all that dating and honeymoon period. She just kept telling me how handsome I was. She was from another country, and I was the first American she ever dated. And I think maybe that was on her bucket list. I don't know. And yeah. And I'm telling you, there was just day after day, you're so handsome and yada, yada. One of the last things she said to me when we were parting, and the parting was not amiable, was, I do not find you attractive anymore.
You're not attractive. Yeah.
And that hurt. And that really hurt, because number one, I was being told that all along, but to be told by somebody that you really... And I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound weird, but I was in love with her and I respected her. And I like you said, I was pleasing her and I thought she was my everything. And then to be told that by her. So, of course, I walked around for 3 to 6 months after that thinking that I was ugly, you know, that I was, you know, I had got, of course, I had grown 3 years older. And but she just planted that seed into me, and that destroyed me. It absolutely destroyed me.
But here's the thing. It's really your looks have absolutely nothing to do with anything she's saying, because so the beginning of the, you know, relationship with a narcissist, they're trying to figure out what might be important to you. How can they boost you up and how can they destroy you? And so she got you, she kind of like ensnared you with this narrative about how good looking you are. Like, I've never met an American man. I've never been with an American man. So, oh, this is amazing. And like, that's getting you, that's pulling you into this idea of like, I'm attractive to her. She finds me hot and sexy because I'm different than what she's used to. That's how she pulled you in, because that's something that worked on you. I'm attractive. I want to be attractive. I want to be attractive. And she finds me attractive. This is great. And so the same thing that works to reel you in is going to be the exact same thing to knock you off your horse and destroy you, because she's learned what's important to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if it was something else that wasn't working to pull you in, it wouldn't have the impact. So she wants you hungry for her approval, so that then she's in control of how you're feeling about yourself when she's rewarding you or discarding you or dismissing you. That's how she maintains the control. And so really, she used your looks just to figure out what's important to you, what's going to work on you. So it's not that you were attractive and then you weren't attractive anymore. Yeah. It's that your attractiveness the whole time was irrelevant. It was always her trying to use what would
work. It was a tool for her to get what she wanted. And it worked, because it had I known, you know, you go on social media today or listen to other podcasts. Now the buzzword is narcissist, right? Everybody's throwing the term around. And I think maybe in a few minutes we should actually define the term.
Sure.
But I have one question quickly. You talked about manipulations. Would that be synonymous with gaslighting?
So gaslighting is a form of manipulation. It's one of the many types. It's a manipulation tactic. So they'll use all kinds of manipulation tactics. And gaslighting is it's a common one. It's one that people are talking about a lot.
Also, right.
Realizing what it is. But, you know, there's gaslighting, projection, you know, all kinds of things.
Okay. All right. We're talking about the white elephant. What is NPD in the DSM-4 or 5 now? I don't know what's out.
It is 5. Yeah, it's one of the 10 personality disorders. There are 10 personality disorders. Narcissistic personality disorder is one of them. And, you know, I could read off the criteria for you, but that would be very boring. Instead, I crafted in my book what I thought would be like the most comprehensive and concise, not too long definition of like what is a narcissist. And they're self-absorbed, pride-protecting, empathy-lacking, greed-driven individuals who hurt other people to protect their fragile egos and maintain their status as superior, special, or perfect. And yep. So those are kind of the beginning is really kind of like the qualifiers, the adjective, the things that describe them. And the whole time what they're doing is manipulating you so that they can continue to feel good about themselves. Really, they're people who are so full of deep shame, really deep down inside. They're so insecure with fragile egos. And so everything they're doing is to shield themselves from having to touch their shame or letting anyone touch their shame. And so they're trying to project this image of I'm perfect, I'm amazing, I'm superior to everybody else, because they actually can't tolerate this idea that they're flawed or could make a mistake or that there's anything wrong with them at all. In a totally dysfunctional, pathological way. So all of this stuff they do is to protect themselves from feeling their own shame.
Okay. Does a NPD anywhere on the spectrum, let's just say 50% or higher, are they aware that they are doing this? Or is... No. Okay. No.
They would never recognize that they're a narcissist, first of all, because again, there's nothing wrong with them. They don't have a personality disorder. They're not a bad person. A lot of them believe that they're the most generous, benevolent, you know, that they're great. That's part of it. And
she was very giving in the beginning, was down here cooking all the time and cleaning, and I got gifts. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they know how to be charming and generous and exciting, and they know how to do that. And they can be that way, you know, they can be that way. But ultimately, everything is about them. So they're doing what they want. And the moment that something doesn't feel good or something is about somebody else or you disagree with them or contradict them, they're back to just protecting their shame. And so that's why they get suddenly so slighted and easily offended and kind of erupt when things either don't go their way or they feel attacked in a disagreement. And so, you know, the honeymoon period can be really glorious while they're, you know, part of their grandiosity sometimes is to be generous, to be charming and amazing and kind. It's part of the grandiosity. But the moment, you know, it's not working for them or they're not getting what they want or they feel criticized, then it quickly changes. It turns on a dime.
It does.
They don't know that they're narcissists. Now, a lot of times I get asked, do they know that they're manipulating? Are they aware that they're being manipulative? And that's a little grayer because I think that they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing, but they justify that what they're doing is okay because of their narrative, their own distorted narrative about being perfect or not wrong or special or feeling entitled to what they need. So it's like they know they're stealing, but they justify that they deserve it, kind of, right? Like that, it's that idea. So yeah, they know, but they've justified that it's not wrong when they do it somehow.
Yeah. All right. One of the things that I've always said, I have a couple of phrases, like in the cult podcast that I have, I say nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I think I'll join a cult today. They join a religious organization that they think is all nice, and almost cults would be on the same parallel as narcissism. In the beginning, they love bomb you, they love you, they do all that stuff. And then once they got you in, then the indoctrination comes in.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
In a relationship, they do the same thing. And I've always said, so like I said, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I think I'll join a cult today. I don't think out of all of the disorders that people, bipolar, anxiety, depression, borderline personality, where people know that they have issues, like they're constantly depressed, so they don't get out of bed, they're not eating. You know, those type of people one day will hit rock bottom and they will finally get up and go to a therapist. They'll make a phone call. I'm an example in the alcohol world. Like finally I hit bottom and I got up and said, I need help, and I got help. A narcissist, I think, is one of the few, if not only personality that will never walk into a therapist's office and says, I'm a narcissist. I need help. Right.
And when they do that, they're not narcissists. They're usually people who've been gaslit and manipulated by a narcissist.
Yeah,
they think they're the problem because they've been convinced. That's right. Because I mean that the key definition is the lack of self-reflection, the lack of empathy. It's the only way that they can protect their shame and their fragile ego is to not ever look at themselves. Their whole like life's work, really, they're committed to distorting reality to fit a narrative about themselves as special and perfect.
Would you say, and I have a follow-up statement, would you say that, well, maybe in your experience, in your practice, that many narcissists, is it part of their gene or their DNA, or is it something that happened during their childhood?
Both. So both together. You know, you're a narcissist. So first of all, with a personality disorder, it's a developmental disorder. So that means you were born that way. You're born with the personality. Now, whether or not it develops into a disorder really does depend on your environment and your upbringing. So what happens is you take a child with the genetic predisposition to be narcissistic, have narcissistic traits, which we all have some amount of on that spectrum.
Right.
We're talking about a child who has a good amount of them, who's more narcissistic than your average person. And then you put them in an environment where it can go a lot of different ways. The one that I believe is the most common and obvious is the enabling and the spoiling. You know, a lot of people talk about abuse and neglect, and that's true. You can create a lot of shame in a child with constant criticism and abuse and neglect, of course. But think about when you have a child who's already prone to self-entitlement and controlling and dominating other people, and then you positively reinforce that behavior and you give in to tantrums and you tell them they don't have to face consequences like everybody else because they're so special and amazing, and you protect them from, you know, the curveballs life throws you. And so that is how you grow self-entitlement. That is how you grow that monster.
And they, at an early age, will learn how to use that narcissistic behavior to survive.
Yes. I mean, well, to survive for them is just to protect their ego and not have to look at their character defects, right? That is what narcissism is, because people who aren't narcissistic can look at their character defects and survive, right? It's kind of like, I mean, I know you talk about this at 12 step. There are some people who are unconstitutionally incapable.
Capable.
And I think they're talking about these individuals, right? Because they're not capable of being honest. They're not capable of self-reflecting. So how can you do that work where you examine your character defect,
right,
get honest about your resentments and change your perspective or try to be of service and do better? They can't do that. What happens with that parenting is you're telling them you don't have to face consequences. You don't have to look at what you did and feel bad and do better. And when you raise a child, you have to teach them to be able to tolerate their mistakes and self-soothe and overcome the feelings of shame and how to rise up from that. And with a narcissist, they're taught like, well, my boy didn't do that. You know, Johnny's perfect, or well, it's always protecting the child and not facing consequences.
Okay.
Tantrums, maybe.
Okay. A question popped into my mind so you hear the term helicopter parent today.
Yes.
Parents who hover over the kids too much, and they are protective. And like you said, my Johnny will never be bad. And sometimes you see this at soccer games and all the games at schools I forget what they're called, but you know what I'm talking about. When the parents come running on the field and saying, my son didn't deserve that penalty. Is that feeding into, are we talking about something like that?
Yeah. Like my child's exempt.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I get called down to the school and my child got in trouble, I would defend him or her and say, no, she didn't cheat on that exam.
Right. You're teaching the child they don't have to face consequences. They're special.
Okay.
And, you know, like how many times do you see like someone like in a documentary about serial killers or, you know, a guy like the, you know, crime documentaries, and they talk to the mother and it's, oh, no, he's a good boy, you know.
Yeah.
He's not murdering people, but he's a good boy, you know. And if that's what she's been doing her whole life with him, of course he turned out this way, you know.
Also, you get the neighbors. Always the neighbors will say, you know, because they catch. Right now, I live on Long Island. So the Gilgo Beach serial killer, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, they found the bodies from where I live. And of course, that's big news here. And today he actually went to trial to, they wanted to admit the DNA they found, and the courts of defense wants to throw the evidence out, whatever. So you were talking about documentaries. You always see not just the parents, but the neighbors will say, oh, he was such a nice man.
Well, now we're talking about something else. Now we're talking about the wool they're able to put over their eyes, right? Now we're talking about how they're able to fool people and present this facade of being a good person. And when you get closer in reality, when you really, like, you have an intimate relationship with them, or they're in your family, or they're your partner. So when you get close, it's different. That's when the narcissism seeps out. That's when you can see it. They're not presenting this to the whole world. They're only doing what they can get away with. So, you know, he's showing up at work and he's, you know, doing what he's, you know, he's got his briefcase and he's an architect and, you know, and he's looking like a normal guy all day long, right?
Yep.
But I wonder what it's like at home with that wife who's like going through what she's going through. Like, you know, he did all these killings while she was out of town, right? It made me wonder. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm like, gosh, she sure went out of town a lot. And then I'm like, look at what kind of guy he is when you're close and personal with him. Maybe she wanted to be out of town a lot, right? Yeah. Like, she's wanting to just get away from him because he's so whatever he's actually like. And then, you know, when she's gone, that's when he's doing his killings. That marriage was probably, I'm guessing, not
stable.
Yeah. Nah. She's trying to get away from him every chance she gets. And then that's what he's doing when she's gone. So, but the neighbors think everything's cool. The neighbors are like, yeah, you know, he comes out, he says good morning and yep. He seems fine. Right.
Well, and that's what I was talking about. The neighbors always seem the nice side of him. And I'm trying to figure out, is that because a narcissist is always going to try to charm everybody in his circle? His neighbors, his colleagues, the people his favorite.
I don't know. Now, if you're a colleague who has to work closely with him and, you know, put something together, work late hours, close contact and stuff, you're going to see it. You're going to be like, oh, man, every idea I have, he shoots it down. He's got a better one, or he steals mine and says it was, you know, he does all the stuff narcissists do. But if you're working closely with him, if you're just the guy, you see him at the water cooler, hey, how's it, you know,
yeah.
You have no idea.
No idea.
Those doors with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could think of so many examples of, I have to tell this story. We went out to lunch one day, the last relationship and I, and it was Taco Joe's or one of those nice little taco places. And we were eating lunch and there was a homeless man sitting outside of the restaurant, the door. And you could tell he was homeless. He was sitting on a milk crate and he had the cardboard. She jumps up, runs over to the counter, buys something. I don't know. I just know it was a couple of wraps, maybe a burrito or something, and a tall glass of a tall thing of soda, runs out and hands it to him, and then comes back in and sits down. Now, I don't know if that was for show for me or show for the world or to make herself feel better, but I saw that as she was trying to show the world that she's a compassionate. What would you say to that? How would you define that behavior?
Well, I mean, it's a random act from like a person I know very little about. So it could mean a lot
not
of
fair.
Different things. It could mean a lot of different things. You know?
Yeah. But I knew her and I was like, that's not the woman that I know. Not to say that she wasn't generous, but she was generous with me. But to me,
more times when she was generous with you. And so it's like she's capable of it. But I think what happens with narcissists a lot is that they know how to please. They know how to be generous. They know how to be nice. That's how they get you in the first place. No one's going on a second date with a narcissist going, yeah, that's an obvious narcissist, but I'm signing up for more. No one does that.
No.
They know how to do it. They know how to be nice and make you like them. But what happens is when they feel slighted, attacked, criticized, disagreed with, told no, it becomes about them and what they want. And they don't care what your experience is while they're trying to get their needs met or feel good in this situation. Suddenly, once there's a conflict, they're winning at your expense. And that's it. If there's no conflict, it's usually fine. But it's like there's a conflict as soon as you have a voice and you need to count also in the equation. And they're just not having that because it's all about them.
Okay. This is a good place to segue. You brought up dating. So, and this is a dating podcast. So I don't know if I should use myself as an example, but let's just say Joe and Jane are on dating apps, two different people. So I want to use both genders and they're swiping and swiping and they match and they're talking and they decide to go on a meet and greet, whether it's a coffee or a drink or whatever they decide. And you and I talked about this a little bit, you know, before we recorded. Is there any telltale signs to spot a narcissist in the very beginning of dating? Because this is a two-sided question or coin or problem, because I saw all, now in hindsight, I saw all the red flags, but I ignored them. So I take responsibility for that. But is there anything that we should look for on date one, day two, day three?
Yeah. I mean, I think that all of the things that you want to pay attention to are things that they don't necessarily tell you they're a narcissist, but that means you should pay attention and keep paying attention and pay attention to everything. So when you have someone who talks only about themselves and doesn't seem interested in you. Now, some people on first dates are trying to make a good impression. So all these things that people do, it could mean something else, right? That's why I say you can't spot a narcissist, but you can have an antenna up and kind of be aware, like, is this narcissism? But when they're talking only about themselves, it's like, well, maybe they're nervous. Maybe they're trying to make a good impression and tell you, you know, things that will make you like them or whatever. So pay attention and see if that continues, or interject things about yourself and see if they're interested in listening when you do that. So you don't have to just realize, like, think, oh, they never ask me any questions, they're a narcissist. Just interject. Just after a while, you've heard all about their, you know, their relationship. Yeah. All, you know, it's like, oh, you know, let me tell you about some of mine and see how much they care. And that's how you'll know. Because someone who's just not good at talking, and they'll be like, oh, I've been talking only about myself. Yeah, yeah, tell me about you. They'll be relieved that you did that. A narcissist will be like, oh, they don't care. So there's that, needing to be right all the time, trolling things, like telling, like ordering for you, like to kind of not really care.
Interesting.
Sometimes, but again, some men are old fashioned and they're like, oh, let me order for that. They think that, right? But so again, it's not a giveaway. Oftentimes when they're telling you we need to eat, they're picking the place. You know, women are like, oh, pick the place. Like, don't ask me what I want. Pick the place. And that's great. But when someone's like, we're going here, and they don't care if you're like, well, I don't really actually like sushi. And they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care. They're going where they want to go. Those are kind of little things in the beginning that should just make you pay. It doesn't mean they're narcissists, but should make you pay attention. Of course, there's the love bombing. I say this on every podcast. Yes, narcissists love bomb, but also a lot of different types of people love bomb. You don't have to be a narcissist to love bomb. People love bomb because they have a bad filter and they really like you, or maybe they have ADD and they just like say too much, or maybe it's a love addict who thinks they're in love all the time.
Yeah, or like me, because I love bombed. If I find the woman attractive and I'm trying to court her, I guess is the word, of course I'm going to throw, you're beautiful. I have this, God, I feel silly even saying this. I tell women how beautiful their smile is, and because it used to work, just by saying, oh, you have a beautiful smile.
That's not love bombing.
Okay, like, so let's define, what is love bombing?
Well, I mean, when they're talking about you like you're their soulmate and their person, like right away, like the first date or
okay.
Two, it's like, you're just what I've been looking for. And also if like they think you want kids and they're already talking about marriage and kids really soon, and I myself have kids with you and all, it's like, no, really? We're on the third date? Okay. Like,
yeah. That's
like way too much. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it's nice and normal to tell a woman that she's beautiful if you find her beautiful, and that's nice. You're complimenting her. Complimenting a woman is not love bombing. Love bombing is like really accelerating the relationship.
Over the top.
Appropriate way. Over the top. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so while we're on the topic, and even it's a little bit off topic, if we're defining, what is trauma bonding?
Well, there's a lot of different definitions, and people, you know, think it means, oh, some people, you know, just kind of throw the word around like it means we're bonding over the same trauma, right? But there's another definition, the actual sort of psychological definition, where trauma bonding can refer to what happens when you're in a cycle of abuse in a relationship. And it starts with the honeymoon phase where everything's great. And it's really, really fulfilling in a way where maybe you are being love bombed and it just feels great that someone's just like this enamored of you and obsessed with you. And then things start to change and the devaluation phase sets in where now they're belittling you or neglecting you or ignoring you or not treating you so well anymore. And what happens is you become addicted to when it felt good and you're just trying to get that moment back. You're doing everything you can to restore the relationship, where it's like, that's how, when we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, this you get stuck kind of trying to please the abuser. You are like, well, your whole life now revolves around pleasing them instead of taking care of yourself, because you're just trying to get that honeymoon period back in your relationship. And so you get addicted to the highs of the relationship. When you're in the low, you're just trying to get that high back. That's why it's kind of like addiction in that way, of like trying to get that first high back that you'll never get.
Yeah. It'll never go back
to the way it was in like the first, you know, month of your relationship. And you're addicted to trying to get that feeling back when they mistreat you. And so that's, you know,
trauma, but the form, but one of the,
right. That's what you heard, right? That's matches with what you've thought of it, or something else.
I can only use my experience of what I went through. Was in the first 5 dates, let's just say, that you bond over past trauma. So my husband cheated on me. Oh, well, so did mine. And I caught him in bed with my best friend. Really? Well, mine was my, my uncle, whatever. And then you're swapping these horrible stories.
Yeah, that was kind of my first one. And yeah, that's how a lot of people talk about it. What narcissists do is find out what your traumas are so they can say they have the same ones, so that you'll feel bonded. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
There's different like interpretations of it, but yeah. I mean, yeah, they'll do that. That's what I mean. Like, they'll try to find out when you were talking about the attractive piece of, she told me I was attractive and then she took it away and told me I was unattractive. They're just trying to find what matters to you, what's important to you, to use against you, to use to get what they want. You're attractive. That's how they reel you in. You're unattractive, to make you feel bad so that maybe they can win, right? Like, a lot of times it's guilting and shaming you to get what they want, right? Or they're just sometimes mean as they leave. Because it makes them feel better about themselves to some crazy reason. Hurting someone else makes them feel power. I mean, they get off on power and domination, unfortunately.
So. I could tell you what happened, but I'm not going to do that because that's not time for this. So, okay, let's go back to dating.
Right. So another thing, I think, kind of as you get deeper into a relationship, so maybe after date, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and now you're really getting to know each other. As soon as you notice, and this is any relationship, as soon as you notice that when you bring something up to talk about how something made you feel, or to disagree with them, or any kind of conflict, and they immediately dismiss you or shoot you down, or, you know, tell you you're too sensitive or you're crazy or that didn't happen, gaslighting, and they will not hear your experience or your feelings at all and make you feel bad for bringing it up, that's a pretty strong indication that you're with a narcissist, because again, they're just protecting their shame, and that prevents them from being able to understand or listen to your experience or your feelings.
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure the chronological pattern. So you meet somebody, you go on a date, and especially maybe in a narcissist, he or she. Oh, by the way, is there a ratio? Are there more male narcissists than female? Is there?
Statistically, they used to say yes, but I think they're fine. I don't agree with that. There are plenty of female narcissists, and whatever the numbers are, you know, I think sometimes people recognize narcissism in a man, and then in a woman, they might think it's something else, or I really don't pay too much attention to that. I think men and women can be narcissists.
Well, yeah, there's definitely both genders, or all genders, depending on what. Mm-hmm. I just was wondering if there was
I think they used to statistically report that it was more men.
Yeah.
Certainly there are more men with antisocial personality disorder, which is sort of like beyond narcissism in the sociopathic category, where you have serial killers and that kind of thing. But narcissists, you know, I feel like it's probably about even when you really, you know.
Do we know, I'm going to pick your brain, I guess, a little bit. Do we know what statistically how many there are in, let's just stay with America right now?
I think it's hard because, you know, I mean, they say something like, 5 to 10%, but you know, it's more, I think. Well, here's the thing, you know, if maybe it's a low number when we're talking about people with a full blown disorder, but people with traits, see, this is the thing. It gets really kind of
tricky.
Like, do they have a disorder? Like, you know, they have a disorder for sure if they don't change and they're incapable of change and they're never going to change. And it gets worse and worse with age. To me, that is certainly indicative of a personality disorder. They don't get better. They get worse. When you see a self-entitled adolescent, they may or may not even become a narcissist, and it might be emotional immaturity. And then it, you know, maybe it goes away over time. Maybe that's someone with narcissistic traits, but you can certainly predict when someone young is growing into a narcissist, when they have these behaviors that seem more outrageous than the average teenager's self-entitlement or whatever. But when it gets worse into adulthood with each coming year or decade, it's, you know, you should be emotionally maturing. And if you're just getting more and more narcissistic, you probably have narcissistic personality disorder.
And I think you touched upon this earlier. I think you said this, a statement, something like this. We are all narcissists. We are all on the spectrum.
Yeah, we're not all narcissists, but we all have narcissistic
tendencies. Thank you. Yeah, which is just part of the human self-defense system. So, and what I can think of is, let's say there's an emergency. So those who go flying to the grocery store to buy all the toilet paper, you know, where then you have the other people who are the ones handing out the toilet paper. You know, I went through Superstorm Sandy. So I, you know, you could see the people who panic and it's all about me and save. I want me to be okay. And then you got the first responders and all the volunteers. And I wonder if people who panic in an emergency, earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, the ones who are panicking and like, I have to go get, well, water is a necessity, but the people, right, like even during COVID.
More about anxiety now, I think, than narcissism.
Okay. You know? Yeah. I good. You know? Thank you for clearing that up. So.
I mean, certainly okay. A narcissist is like, I'm going to go get my toilet paper and screw everyone else, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, they come out in hordes of it. I remember, I mean, I live alone. So during COVID, I just got what I needed because we didn't know how long lockdown was, right? So, and then the stores started putting limits on them anyway. So you can only get, you know, whatever. Each store had its own limit. I just see people, like when you see people in the movie stampeding out of a coliseum or something because there's a bomb threat or something, but then you see the responders rushing in. I always, maybe that's not narcissism, but I always panic in people who don't stop and think about what is happening right now and what's the best decision that I can make. You know, all these zombie movies that you see that used to come out, I think zombies have gone away, but you know, back when Walking Dead was big, you know, you would see all these people like scrambling to the store, whatever. So we're getting way off topic. So
yeah, like how people respond to a crisis is kind of
crisis.
More like anxiety. But you know, if you want to take like a big event or something elevated and see like what it brings out in people, I always think about what people do in a position of power. So like someone in a position of power can be humanitarian and give, and someone else is going to exploit and, you know,
right.
That's always an interesting thing to me. Like, what do you do with your power? Do you use it? Are you benevolent or, you know?
Yeah.
Narcissistic, right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of movies like, you know, that kind of highlight that.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, because you see that kind of Hollywood portrays the panic people all the time, the trampling over people. But okay, we got about a couple of minutes left. I want you to talk about a little bit about your practice, what maybe if you have any, we talked about this before, if you don't have any stories, just tell us a little bit about your practice, where we can find you.
Tell
the listener why they come to you.
Yeah, people come to me when they're trying to make sense of their relationship, when they're trying to improve it, or they're thinking about ending it, or if they're dealing with someone that, you know, feels like maybe they're a narcissist and they're not sure. And so they want help from someone who gets it. And so that's the scope of what I do in my practice.
Have you ever had a patient, client that was seeing you and they were in a marriage or a relationship and they say to you, I think my husband's a narcissist, so let's reverse it, wife, whatever. And they say, I'd like to bring him or her in on the session. Do you do that?
I will do that, but I am very clear when I get a call like that and letting them know that if their partner really is in fact a narcissist, that couples therapy, joint therapy will not work. It's counterproductive, that it'll actually could even be, if there's domestic violence, it'll be worse for the victim And so if that's really what's going on, I strongly discourage that and suggest working with me individually instead to talk about what's going on and how. A lot of the work that I do is in individual therapy, helping the person who feels powerless step into their power and then reevaluate the relationship. Because often a lot of things change when you change what you do. I don't need both people to change at once. That's great when both people are working on themselves. But in families and in couples, when one person does something different, the other one naturally responds to the different behavior in a different way. And you can kind of see what can happen to the relationship. Well, when you're dealing with a narcissist, it doesn't necessarily make it better, but at least my client feels more empowered and is now examining the relationship through a different lens. And it's through a more self-empowered in control lens and not the powerless victim lens. And usually that's when they're ready to end it because they see, oh, this person really is a narcissist, or, oh, this person really isn't going to change. And that's when they feel more capable of walking away. The idea is that those things that they're learning to do could work to benefit the relationship. But that depends on whether the person on the other end receiving that is well adjusted enough to absorb that and respond well to their new boundaries.
Okay. Another question just popped into my head. So I'm 27 years old and I fall in love with a woman my age and we get married. And 5 years in, the honeymoon's over and I start to see narcissistic tendency. Let's just say I'm semi-educated on it. And, or I don't know. I listen to some podcasts. I come to you and I say, I think my wife is a narcissist. And I give you the reasons why. I explain what's going on. Is it possible for them to maintain the marriage if you coach the one person? And let's say, see, I love him. He's great because he does do many great things, but no, is it, if somebody's in a relationship,
it depends on who they're dealing with and how that person feels. So my job is to help my client respond, interact better. And then it depends on who's on the other end. Is this someone with some traits who, when you set boundaries, can respond to them? Or when you give them insight, they're willing to take that in and hold themselves accountable? Because people do what they can get away with, you know?
Sure.
My job is to help my client communicate better and not get pulled into the, you know, to the drama, into the chaos. And once they do that, things may or may not change. And then they have a new opportunity to reevaluate their relationship. So, you know, I'll say, well, you know, when he gets upset, you know, the first thing I want to hear is how they're responding to the narcissist behavior. Well, how do you deal with that? How do you respond? And usually it's not helpful. What they're doing is not helpful. They're not bad people. They're not handling it very well. And I'm like, okay, I want to coach them through how to better handle a conflict like that. And then we see as we go, like, so how is that working? Is it helping or not? If it's not helping and it's just getting worse, the person on the other end probably is narcissistic, but then the client is usually looking at it from a different position now. And it's usually they're feeling less helpless and they're realizing that this person isn't going to change. They see themselves. Listen, when you start to become assertive, that in and of itself is confidence building because you're stepping in, you're becoming someone who behaves with confidence and that helps you become confident. And so when you are assertive, regardless of how the other person responds to it, it certainly feels better to be assertive and have it still not work than to clam up and feel closed in like you can't do anything or say anything, right? I mean, unless we're talking about domestic violence where you talk back and you get across the room, you know, I'm not talking about that.
I personally believe that if, and let's just say a woman, because there's more men that are the domestic violence abusers. If he hits you once, he's always going to hit you.
That's absolutely. I'm not even talking about the physical is a different thing.
Yeah.
But it's how you respond to someone who won't listen to you or gaslights you, or it's to know when they're doing it and then to respond a different way rather than trying to prove your narrative and getting pulled into the chaos and the vortex of it. They can pull you into the ring and just, you know, hit you with a barrage of manipulation tactics before you even know what's happening. So you want to understand what's happening. I mean, it would take another whole show to talk about how you communicate and what you do and all the, you know, it takes more than one therapy session for me to help my client understand everything.
But I would imagine it takes a long time.
It takes a long time, but the idea is that they do something different and then they can evaluate what to do next. I can't predict. I can never predict if it's going to result in an improved relationship or a relationship that ends. I can never predict that if the guy's never sat in the room or I've never seen him. I can't predict that.
No.
But what I know for sure is that something different is going to happen. Something's going to happen. It's not going to be the same old, same old. And that's why they're here, is to, you know.
You're sending her home with tools, home with tools and resources to deal with it. Now, I just another question popped into my head. What happens when there's children involved? So you have let's just say a woman comes in and they're married 7 years and they have a 3 and a 5 year old at home. And the father is a narcissist. All the signs are there. Does number one, does that affect the children, and will they become narcissists? Put children into the mix.
A question that will take us in a whole lot of different. Like, there's no short answer to that. There's a lot of things to consider in a scenario with children.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to protect them from the narcissist, but also how bad are they? Do you want to leave them in joint custody with the narcissist? Custody arrangement. There's like a whole, you just opened up a whole can of worms there.
Yeah,
I don't even want to get into
it. Well, maybe I'll be back for part two for that because I'm thinking that the children are great. I know this again from the other cult podcast that I do, that children are severely affected by the behavior of the parents in any kind of a situation. So yeah. I just wondered if narcissistic parents, how badly it affect the child or children.
The short answer to that is you want to prioritize protecting your children from a narcissistic or any kind of abusive parent if you can, the best you can. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Carla, what's the name of your book again?
My book is called Outsmarting Egomaniacs, How to Respond to Narcissists and Master Manipulators, and it's available everywhere. It's on audio, it's on Kindle. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you get your books.
Okay, and your website is?
CarlaLitoTherapy.com.
And any social media you want to throw out there? I'll put all this in the show notes, by the way. So.
Yeah. Instagram is Carla Lito Therapy.
Excellent. I'll put all this in the show notes. So,
okay.
Carla, it was a delight speaking to you today. And thank you for your wisdom and your knowledge. And I hope somebody got something out of this. And you do virtual therapy so people can all over the country?
Yes, all over the country. I can be your relationship coach. I can be your therapist in the state of California.
Isn't that cool? Because like 10 years ago, that didn't exist. You had to sit in somebody's office. And now you could just sit in front of your computer and get therapy. It's very cool. So, yeah. All right, Carla. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I would like to thank Carla Lito so much for stopping by and explaining all of that. And wow, narcissism. It's a buzzword we're throwing around a lot today, folks. But, you know, to break it down and to really understand the implications of it and how to avoid getting into a relationship with one, which is almost impossible because, like she said, you really can't spot them up front. When you are really on a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth date, and all that wonderful oxytocin's running around your brain, you're not looking at the red flags. This podcast all started with like how to learn the red flags in the beginning. And that's because that relationship that I was in, it was all about dodging and missing and ignoring those red flags. And today I am very much aware of them and looking for them, but it's, you know, you really shouldn't have to go into like a first or second or third date and look for red flags. Look for those green flags. Anyway, by the way, I am testing out a new microphone. I do have a new, I've upgraded my microphone, and I don't know. I'm not sure that I like it. If you guys hear a difference in the audio quality, I would love to hear back from you. Let me know. So thumbs up, thumbs down on the new audio. And also, speaking of thumbs up and thumbs down, I could use some more reviews and some tell your friends about the podcast. And in the show notes, it's buy me a cup of coffee. And of course, all of Carla Lito's information will be in the show notes as well as and how to get her new book. And folks, as always, pass this information along to your friends, anybody struggling in the dating world. But in the meantime, until next week, Anonymous Andrew saying ciao.